The call Grand Junction Regional Airport Authority Board meeting to order. In attendance, we have all of our commissioners except Commissioner Shear. So we have quorum. And then Victoria, who do we have among us today as guests and staff?
For airport staff, we have CEO Angela Padalecki, Facilities Director Glenn Peck, Director of Operations Dylan Timmerline, Terminal Operations Manager Cameron Reese, myself, Victoria Hightower, Port Clerk, Finance Manager Jennifer Croker, and Office Coordinator Christina Warren.
We have Jeremy Lee and Brad Rolfe, and then Kaylin from the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel. Welcome. Did we get everyone?
And sorry, Sarah Mingy is online, our CFO, and then Colin Michael.
Wonderful. All right, let's kick it off with our Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you all. So with that, I will take an approval of today's agenda if there are no changes.
So moved.
Thank you, Commissioner West. Thank you, Commissioner Clements. A second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Wonderful. The motion carries. Do we have commissioner comments today? I don't think I have anything either. For once. Any citizen comments today?
I did not receive.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much. So then we're down to our consent agenda. And I just need a motion to, if there are no changes to that, a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. No changes to the board meeting list, and it carries. So that takes us to our public hearing on our budget presentation, and I'm making the assumption that Sarah Mingy is going to present that today. Is that correct?
Yep, but I think you can hear now. Sarah, can you hear us?
Yep, I can hear you guys. Can you hear me okay?
Ah, perfectly. Thanks, Sarah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for your patience, and sorry that I am logging in remotely today. Travis and I are at a conference on airline rates and charges and PFC revenue, so I'm pretty excited about that. Victoria, could you advance the slide for me, please? So I think today for you guys, within the board packet that I sent out, I did include a pretty detailed narrative description of the assumptions that we used to come up with the 2026 budget. So today I wanted to cover just a few highlights and, you know, offer some time for questions. So please do speak up and interrupt me if you have a few. Also, if you'd like to schedule time individually to go in a more detailed level of questions, I'm happy to do that as well. Just reach out and we can get something scheduled. We also reviewed this in detail with the Finance and Audit Committee last week and did incorporate some of their feedback and made a few changes after that meeting. I think I'll probably give an overview first and then maybe let Chris provide any additional commentary about that meeting at the end, if that works. So I think the three main objectives just that we were trying to stick to when we were preparing the budget, we really started with very conservative assumptions for activity levels, revenue, and expenses. So for our revenue, we're really putting together what we think a very minimum level of collections is that we think is possible and what we could operate on, but not necessarily what we expect. And then for the expenses, we've really taken it to say, what is the maximum spend that we would put in next year? So you do see, it looks like a little bit of a mismatch between the change in income and expense. Income's going up about 2% from forecast for 2025, expense about 8%. But we are maintaining a really strong operating income of $2.3 million, which is over a 20% profit margin from operations, which feels really strong. I also think it's important to note this is not our expectation or best guess or goal of what activity levels and revenues are, but really just that conservative budget assumption. The other two pieces that we really stuck to, we wanted to make sure we were balancing how much of our revenue is coming from airline rates and charges. We want to make sure that we have competitive rates for them and that we are just being cognizant of balancing our increases between airline revenues and non-airline revenues. And the budget certainly has the continued capital investment program with both the runway replacement and some facility upgrades that we have planned for parking and just other areas around the airport like the tower. I think next slide, unless there's any initial questions, I guess.
No
I'm
questions,
sorry.
Sarah.
I know it's awkward without me being there in person. As we went to prepare the budget, one of the things that we really looked at was historical actual spend and revenues from 2022 to 2024. We look at revenues that are driven by passenger activity as a spend per passenger, others based on their contractual rates, and then kind of looking at that average spend and expenses. And just the amount of growth as I kind of zoomed out and looked at 2022 to where we're forecasting to come in for 2025 was just substantial. Passenger traffic, revenues, and operating expenses, you know, you see that huge upward trend. Everything has increased over 40% from 2022 to 2025. So just a really great trajectory for our airport and just showing that we are a place that people are wanting to fly out of and airlines are serving. For budget, it is a little bit awkward to put all of those prior 4 year actuals to a budget number because I did say we are being extremely conservative, but we still see an upward trend in revenue, even though we are right now just budgeting for a decrease in activity level. I think it's important to note we had a number of record-breaking items in 2025 with passenger enplanements, diversion activity, fuel flowage, and fire. So while we certainly would like to see everything grow again, and we're probably going to set goals around growth, we did want to make sure we're budgeting for some of that to soften a little bit in the market because that was such a high record-setting year. So I just thought this was a good visual, but if you want to go to the next slide, I have a summary of the operating revenues and expenses. Just a couple of things to point out and highlights here. About 73% of the budgeted revenue that we have in 2026 right now is from the airlines, and the remainder is from non-airline revenue. That is increasing even though we have an expected decrease in activity. Because we're projecting that we'll increase the rates, so our landing fee rate on 1,000 pounds landed for those commercial airline activities, as well as an increase in our terminal rent rate. We're also seeing a few of those incentives drop off. As you may remember, as we've brought on new routes and new airlines, we do offer some discounted landing fees and terminal rent rates. So some of those are going away this season. We do still have a few that will continue. The Delta service and then Breeze, part of their Las Vegas service, will be on incentive through most of this year. But their SNA service to John Wayne is dropping off. So that's why that airline revenue is increasing, even though you see some of those decreases in activities that we have included in the budget. And then for non-airline revenue, we looked at a lot of those as far as contractual rent rates, what CPI increases look like at least through August. That's not the period we'll base it off of, but that gives us an idea of what those increases will be. And we've also assumed that our spend per passenger is going to remain strong right now as far as restaurant parking and rental cars. Parking was one thing that we did go back and revise as we talked to the Finance and Audit Committee. We decided to hold that flat to 2025. We did have that mid-year rate increase, and I know we have some planned parking improvement projects, expansion covered parking that, you know, we've been talking about and are hoping to be able to implement, but without having kind of that historical rate of what the new rates look like in those passenger activities, we're just basically budgeting to keep that flat because we also don't know when we can implement some of those new products. And then I think the primary change in operating expenses, I'm sure it stood out in the packet, and I did add some additional graphics in the packet. The main increase is really in our compensation and benefits to our personnel, which the biggest thing I think with that is really we are increasing the total full-time equivalent employees by about 4 from where we're going to end 2025. So the budget includes no vacancies based on what our current positions are. We've also implemented some new shift differentials to help with our 24-hour coverage that we're reaching in both the airfield and the terminal, trying to compensate a little bit for those nights, weekends, just to make that a little bit more competitive compared to other positions around the valley that have that 24-hour service. So that's the largest increase there. We also have planned increases in health insurance, which we'll adjust once we know those final rates. And then retirement benefits, our para contribution rate for the employer is going up. So all of that is coming to probably that largest expense that we have within the operating expenses. But I think those are the main factors, is that conservatism, the additional people, and then the benchmarking of those new wage rates. I'll pause there because I think operations might be the area that anybody might have more questions.
Any questions? Everyone's shaking their head no.
All right. Either you're taking it easy on me today or we did a good job in prepping, I guess. On the next slide, I have the detail of the non-operating activity. And really, obviously, what stands out here is that capital program. In the packet, I did include a breakdown of the activity on a project basis. Some of those are planned, certainly not approved yet. So this is really our estimate working with the consultants of how much we think it's possible that we can get done and spend next year in various projects, so we don't have to come back and amend the budget as we're able to do either more or less based on the grants that we have today and those planned next steps in our CIP. I do think it's worth pointing out that a lot of the spend next year and the projects are still at that 90% funding level. All of our fiscal year 2025 grants have 95% match, but a lot of the construction on the major projects that we just got, our year-end grant, that won't start until the fall of next year. So the first 9 months of that spend are going to be at that higher match percentage, which is why you see that contributions number not being closer to 95%. I think it's close to 90.5% or 91% of the total expenditures. And then for the capital expenditures without grant funding, the focus on that for 2026 is going to be the parking lot improvements, some CFC improvements. There is a pretty significant amount, about $4 million of that is coming from restricted funds. So CFC collections that we have from rental car customers, as well as that SIB loan that we took out in 2025 to help fund the parking and roadway improvements. And then I think on the next slide, I just kind of have an overall snapshot. This shows our total appropriations here, as well as the adjusted and estimated cash balances. You'll see for 2025 that we're forecasted to come in pretty high above where we were forecasting in our 2025 budget when we created it last year. And really the big change there is we were able to take advantage of that $6.5 million SIB loan from the state to help fund some of these projects. So that's really bumped up that restricted cash balance and allowed us to preserve some of our unrestricted funds as well. So that's where you see that kind of jump in cash in 2025. And then our 2026 budgeted ending cash balance is pretty close to in line with where we were budgeting for 2025 because we were able to get those funds. So I feel we're still going to end in a very strong position. And again, even with these conservative activity levels, we feel like we're in a great place. Next slide, I just had a few highlights on kind of the requirements, the steps that we've taken and kind of checked those compliance document requirements. So this meeting, we did present to the board and submit the budget by October 15th, which is our requirement. This meeting is our public hearing, open for public comment. We will accept public comment again as we go to approve and pass that resolution. But we are also posting the notice of budget following this meeting. So it'll be published in the Daily Sentinel if you see it, that this is available for review by the public. We'll also be sending information to our airline partners so that they can review the activity assumptions that we used as well as the proposed rates and charges for comment. And then we're targeting final approval either in November or December, I think, pending some of your discussions in executive session. We have statutorily the ability to approve until the end of December. And our approval timeline looks a little bit different. We have a little bit more leniency because we're not collecting any tax revenues. If we're collecting any tax revenues, that adjusts a little bit, but we have a little bit more flexibility there. So we will kind of move as fast as the board would like us to, but that is kind of our preliminary plan right now. And that's all I think also prepared. Yeah, go ahead.
You're amazing. And I think also with the targeting for final approval, one of the conversations we had was quorum, right? We're sitting in a holiday season coming up and just to ensure that we have quorum. So if you all would be good about proactively letting Victoria know your November and December holiday plans so that we can ensure that we have quorum for that budget date. So we can get that accepted and approved.
Yep, and that's all I had prepared. I don't know, Chris, if you had anything, comments you wanted to add from the Finance Audit Committee meeting or?
Yeah, I can just add just quickly. In fact, great job, Sarah, that we get covered it all. And I don't know if I have much to add as far as technicalities, but we did meet as a budget, Finance and Budget Committee, Audit Committee. Dan is in attendance, Tom Benton, myself, We had a chance to poke holes, ask questions. Again, noted the 4% decline in landed weight that's budgeted, kind of reconciling that in our minds to a 2% increase in overall operating revenue, and feels conservative. As a non-aeronautical revenue too, we talked a little bit about parking. The parking revenue feels conservative in the budget, knowing that we're going to be bringing online more parking next year. So the timing of which, you know, is still uncertain, so it feels conservative and appropriate to essentially be flat, if I remember Sarah, in the budget here on our parking revenue year over year when looking at the budget. And that likely will be the conservative outcome. So we felt good about it as a committee, and want to move to the next steps in our December timeline, I think, is what we're looking at for approval.
Yeah, ideally. Any other questions from commissioners at all?
I'll just say it's nice to go through a budget. It isn't such a rosy, all right? Mm-hmm. County and city, I know we're not in the same bucket. flat revenues, inflation, doing a lot of cutbacks this year, so it seems like an easy budget. We've been in the county, so I'm not sure why we have such vastly different projections. Maybe it's just the airline industry right now, but not so reliant on tax revenue. But
yeah,
that's where we're at the county, so glad to see the airport's doing a little better.
I'd echo that. I mean, it's certainly challenging to work through a budget when we're trying to figure out what to cut, where are we at, versus what's a rosy picture, right? Mm-hmm. Something that's encouraging, right? So again, kudos to staff for helping us get in this position. But it's nice as we look forward with so many projects, right? For the sake of the audio, I'm pointing out the window towards the project. But yeah, I'm very encouraged by this as we look forward to the year ahead for the airport.
I think ultimately, like, you know, the big difference is you guys actually are projecting things to be relatively stable, but you have cost increases, right? And your revenue rates stay the same. For the airport, you know, we function more like a traditional business, whereas costs go up, you know, our rates also get to move with that. And so I think that's the big difference. But really, the airport things tend to reflect how things are going in the community. And so since the community is stable and continuing to grow, that's
a good thing.
Yeah, it's a great thing, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Any other questions for Sarah or Commissioner West? Dan, you're on that finance and audit. Did you want to add anything in there?
Just again, great job to Sarah and her team putting the budget together, running the budget meeting. Great job.
Okay, thank you all. Then we thank you for this public hearing and presentation, Sarah. We appreciate you calling in from your tantalizing conference, it sounds like. And then you'll report back to us. How does it look if you do get public comment on it and there are adjustments made? Do you report back to us on that?
So the public comment will typically be made within the meeting, although they do have the ability to reach out to us and review the budget. We have to make that available in our office. So should we get anyone reaching out to us, we will let you guys know and just report that to the board. But otherwise, I think it's probably more likely we'll see it within the meeting.
Perfect.
And I think just one other comment I was gonna make, I know we do have a few moving targets that we should have a little bit better information on to budget for, like our health insurance increases, hopefully within the next month. So we will do a little bit of a tracking and try in the next board packet. We'll just kind of highlight maybe those line items that changed from that initial presentation with an explanation of why. So that way you're not having to go back through the whole thing again. We'll try to kind of keep it concise and focused on changes from here on out.
That sounds great. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time and all of your work, and for the folks on the finance and audit, thank you guys for loaning your eyes and thoughtful questions and expertise to that. I think that's all for our public hearing on the budget, which would lead us next into Go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say it is, and I hate to interrupt and maybe go a tiny bit out of order, but since I am in the conference, rather than waiting for my staff report at the end, I did just kind of have a slide on August year-to-date, and more wanted to just provide an opportunity if anyone had questions on the finance packet outside of just the budget packet, excuse me. So So wanted to move my slide up just so I can let you guys go here afterwards if you had nothing further for me.
That sounds great.
There are two things I want to point out about August financials. One, this is the month where we got ahead of budget on the non-passenger airline landing fees. Remember how we were behind budget a little bit because FedEx had made some changes, but then we had this monster fire season and a lot of versions. So you see that revenue stream along with the fuel-related revenue streams are all caught up on a year-to-date basis as of August. And then second, I really want to highlight, we only had, I believe it was 3% growth in capacity for August, but we saw about a 15% increase in planes. So that is not diversion related. The planes are extremely full. And so, you know, that fall season is looking very rosy. I'll talk more about air service stuff, but I think those are two important things that, you know, don't necessarily jump off the page that I wanted to point out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Any other questions for me? Just finance, budget, PFC conference. Just kidding.
Any other questions? Okay. I don't see any. Thank you, Sarah, for jumping in. We appreciate you.
Thank you all.
Wonderful. So the team has taken the time to invite Beta Technologies Electric Aircraft here today. I think Angela serves on the Aeronautical Board, and if I'm not mistaken, you've already seen a presentation from them. And we're intrigued.
So we've talked at a really high like level, very loosely, about electric aviation with our board in the past. And as part of that discussion, we talked about how the National Renewable Energy Lab and CDOT Aeronautics Division partnered to do a study on electric aviation in Colorado, what that means. Grand Junction was one of the airports they used as an example and to look at. So next month, Dave Ulane, the CDOT Aeronautics Director, and then the airport liaison from NREL, Scott Carey, they will be coming out here to present to the board the results of that study. So we thought it would be good in advance of that for us to really just be able to talk about electric aviation a little bit. And Beta Technologies is one of several companies working on electric aircraft. They recently presented to the Colorado Nautical Board and did a good job, and I thought did a good job talking at a high level, not just about their company, but about electric aviation overall. It's a pretty cool thing. It's getting very close to being very real in the States, and so it's something we want to make sure we're prepared for and get to think about. But really, the purpose of this is for you to learn about Beta. Christopher does a good job presenting, and for you to just get to ask questions and have fun. So, Christopher, thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you guys hear me all right? So,
are you great? Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, well, first and foremost, thank you so much for the opportunity to present in front of you. Huge fan of Colorado. I exclusively ski there. So I'll be there in a couple months to hit the slopes. But other than that, I work for Beta Technologies. My name is Christopher Miller. I work on the business development team for the charging infrastructure on the West Coast. Based out of Los Angeles, going to share a little bit about my company and what we're doing, the cool stuff. So first and foremost, I just want to share that all the photos in this whole slide deck are actual photos of our aircraft flying. We don't do any Photoshop or any renderings or any of that. Our CEO, almost to a fault, is you go do it and then say that you did it and show that you did it, rather than say that you can just, that you can do it type deal. So this is our actual aircraft actually hovering up in Vermont during a flight test that they were doing. But we're Beta. There's kind of three sectors of Beta. There's the electric aircraft side, which is the really cool, neat side that all us amazing aviation enthusiasts get excited about. But without electric, with electric aircraft flying, without the charging infrastructure side, right, you can't really go far, right? So that's the part that I work under, which is the charging infrastructure side and deploying these chargers out everywhere we can get them, and everywhere the use cases make sense, right? But then we also realize that this is a new type of aircraft, and you have to think a little bit differently. It's going to need mechanics, it's going to need pilots, it's going to need people to even maintain the charger, right? And so we have a full training program to make sure that everyone's properly trained on all those. So I don't know if I go to the next slide or how this works. Yeah, there we go. Perfect. So here, just want to touch on this slide real quick. Here are some of our committed partners, people that have invested in us, bought chargers, bought aircraft that we've worked with. Some pretty notable names up there of operators that you could see at Grand Junction. So next slide. So these are our two aircraft. The one on the left, as you can see, is our Alia CTOL. When I say CTOL, conventional takeoff and landing, it's going to land, it's going to take off, just like any, when I say airplane, it's exactly what you think. It's going to land on the runway, it's going to take off on the runway, it's going to use the taxiways. The only difference is the fuel source, right? excuse me. And then on the right, it's our Alia VTOL. And when I say VTOL, that means vertical takeoff and landing. And the idea there is it takes off like a helicopter. Once you're in the air, your pusher motor in the back turns on. Then you kind of runway in the sky, start to go forward. Once you hit above stall speed, your top rotors will turn off and you'll be completely on the wing, just like a normal aircraft. And then when you go to land, you reverse the process where you turn your top rotors off, your back rotor off, and you land like a helicopter. So you get the conveniency of a helicopter and the economics of a plane. Kind of the best of both worlds. So, and that is our actual aircraft hovering in that photo too. So pretty cool. And so this is kind of the suite of products for that we have made for the charging infrastructure side. To date, we have only installed that middle vehicle charger. And that is the bread and butter of this whole suite of the actual charger itself that pumps the electrons. There's a future slide going into a little bit of details about it, but essentially, you know, doing aircraft charging, we realized that, you know, weight is probably one of the most important things on an aircraft to consider, right? You want that the aircraft as light as possible. So every pound of extra equipment you have on it is one less pound of product or person that you can carry. So, you know, on normal traditional ground-based EVs, your battery conditioning system actually rides around in the car with you without you knowing. And when you on the way to a charger, it will actually precondition the battery. And when you charge, it will condition the battery for optimal battery health, charge time, all that good stuff. But like I mentioned previously, in a plane, you have to leave that on the ground. So we actually have our battery conditioning cube on the right there. And it's two separate ports, not next to each other, on our aircraft. And what we'll do is we'll actually condition that battery while it's charging for long-term battery longevity. As well as if you need a very quick charge time to not overheat the battery. And then in the future, where use cases, where it's needed, we actually have a cabin heating and cooling cube, which is very similar to what the jet airliners do right now when they're parked at the gates. And it's really hot, they'll connect the actual tube there and it'll pump heat or AC to the actual fuselage to either, you know, on a hot day, probably up in Grand Junction, you're probably gonna be using the heat function more than the AC function in the winter time to make sure that the packages and the pilot are either cold or hot before they take off. And next slide. Perfect. So a little bit more details about our charger. It is a 320 kW charger. So it's technically a level 4. If you know the levels of chargers out there, we started off getting the off-the-shelf chargers, you know, ground-based charging, and we realized pretty quickly that they're really good at charging cars, and they were never intended to charge electric aircraft. They're tall, they have a lot of stuff on them that breaks all the time. Their customer service isn't great. And their cords are really short because you back into a parking spot, they don't need to be long, right? Well, aircraft have wings and you have to be on an airfield. So it's just a different environment. So we actually went out, designed our own charger by pilots for the aircraft environment. And that's what you see there. It's shorter, so your wing can taxi over it. It has the longest certified cord in the world, and it's actually on a electric reel. So she's actually pushing a button there in that photo that's actually paying the cord out as she walks. And so the reason for that is that the 85th percentile female can handle this cord and winter conditions just fine. It has the CCS1 charging port, which is the most used charging standard in the world, even on the vehicle side, which makes it multimodal, completely agnostic of just our aircraft. You can plug in your F-150 ops vehicle to this, any EV vehicle that has that standard, if that makes sense. And next slide. There we go. And then here's the TMS cube, which I already touched on. But it has a 50-foot cord. We are working to develop an official standard on the actual port, but we're working with several other OEMs in the space to make sure that they have the exact same port so that they can also use this as well. So, excuse me. And as my girlfriend points out, everything is cuter in a miniature form. So we have our actual mini cube, which is a more of a overnight hangered solution where you don't need a quick charge. It's on wheels. You still have that 50-foot cord. You'll still need your three-phase power you plug in. But this is if, the plane's going to sit overnight in a hangar. You can slow charge it at that more of, 6 to 8 hours for a charge is what we're looking at. So. Next slide. Yep. And I've already touched on this, but we're completely multimodal. In fact, we've had 5 airports to date where when we put this in, they've actually converted their ops vehicles to electric. So that way the operations vehicles never leave the airfield anymore. So there's no more oil changes, there's no more gas fill-ups. It's all on the airfield using energy that either the airport owns. Owns and very, very sustainable. Next slide. And all of this is managed currently on the back end through Beta. We have a complete digital services team that can integrate this with the existing point of sales system at the existing airport, or we have an app that can manage it itself to make it a seamless integration for pilots, for operators, all the et cetera. It's only 2 clicks. I rent a lot of EVs, and some of those apps can get pretty tedious to charge. And so ours is pretty simple and straightforward, which is great. Next slide. There we go. Oh, skipped one. All right. Yeah. This is our charging network to date. All of the green dots are online today. You could fly there in our aircraft and charge. The yellow dots will be online very soon. They're under some form of development, just design, construction, something. And as you can see, I'm out in California, and to date, we've really been targeted on customers. We're based up in Vermont, and so we've kind of been growing out from Vermont based on our customer needs, and just now starting to continue to expand west, which is why we're talking to you all, and the state of Colorado. We're in fact, we just had our goal setting meeting with our CEO 2 weeks ago, and he wants to, by the end of next year, be able to fly out to Los Angeles completely on our own charging network. So we've got quite a bit of work to do before then. And so hopefully that route goes straight through Colorado and Grand Junction. Next slide. Yeah. And so I just want to touch base on this because I think it's pretty impactful. If you have, it's basically describing Metcalfe's law, if you haven't heard it before, but essentially, if you have two charging stations, you have one route you can fly back and forth, which is great, right? But very limited in what you can do. If you have 10, five charging stations flyable, you now have 10 routes you can fly, right? But let's say you double that and add two, right? You now have 12 charging stations. You now have 66 routes you can fly with those 12 charging stations, which is pretty meaningful. And just to show you that you don't need a ton of chargers to really get a lot of useful operational routes that you can fly. Next slide. So this is a very important, probably one of the most important slides on the whole slide deck, is the industry alignment, which, there's not that many electric aircraft companies out there. And pretty much every single one of them, except one of them, and I won't name any names, but through process of elimination, you could probably get there, are using our charger. And I just want to say that, the Beta aircraft charger, the Beta aircraft loves it and can use it, but all of these other OEMs on here can also use it. So this isn't just for Beta. It's not just for our operators, right? It's also for all these other electric aircraft operators. And there's some companies that have yet to even develop a plane, but they're developing a plane and they're using that CCS1, right? And so there's companies that are also going to be using this, right? And so I just want to make sure that this is, Beta as a company believes the whole industry is either going to succeed or fail together, right? And what's good for all is good for all, right? So we didn't want to make something that only works for us. So this is not proprietary charger that will only work for our aircraft, right? So next slide. So now get to kind of talk about the economics of electric aircraft. I really love this picture as it's our aircraft flying over the Grand Canyon. It is piloted. You can see the pilots in there. And this is a real photo taken by a Cessna Caravan as a chaser plane. And the reason I want to point that out is we fly a lot of our test data. We have actually over 120,000 hours of flight test of real flying. And with that chaser plane, we're able to compare the cost of normal combustion engine aircraft, maintenance, fuel, crew, all that, right, to our aircraft that you see flying there. And we run the data through all amazing Excel, right? And then we get to throw some numbers up on the screen for you. And so those numbers are, it's about 40% the cost of energy compared to that Cessna Caravan for the electric aircraft. We think it's going to be about one third the cost to actually maintain it, as our engine is completely air cooled, all magnets, right? The only liquid on this plane is the brake fluid and the water bottle you bring on board. That's it, right? So there's not, not a lot. It's not a complicated plane. And then because of that, right, there's 70% reduction of parts, which makes it a safer plane, more simple plane, less things that can go wrong, but it also reduces weight, right? And so with electric air engines, they last a lot longer than those combustion engines, as our engine is actually 98.5% efficient versus your normal combustion engine is 30%, because it only has to be, right? But with electric motors, you have to be more efficient, because your energy density is that much less, right? So certainly makes us excited about and our operators excited about the longevity and operational impacts of the aircraft. Next slide. Reason I'm here talking to you. We love existing airports, right? I mean, these are flying objects. Society has determined flying objects go to airports. Anybody that comes here and tells you that these things aren't going to be at airports to some capacity is lying to you, especially day one. It's they're going to be at airports. They're going to be flying there just like normal aircraft and helicopters fly to airports right now, right? So super excited to hopefully bring it to Grand Junction. Next slide. Airport infrastructure planning. I can briefly go over this, and then when you guys win the grant, we can dig deeper into this. But essentially, we want to be out of the way, preferably edge of a ramp, and things that you can do today as an airport to help repair, right? Especially in the state of Colorado, is put it on your airport ALP. Let the FAA, your local FAA ADO, know that it's on the ALP and you're interested in getting it at your airport. And then Colorado is amazing, and there's funding out there already for this. Even next year, already allocated. So apply for that grant, and hopefully you guys will win it, and we'll be putting a charging infrastructure in at Grand Junction here soon. So next slide. Now I get to show some cool stuff we've done. So we'd actually flew this route 4 months ago on the East Coast, all on our own charging network. When we got out to the West Coast, we had to use an annoying charge truck. And part of the goal was that we're actually going to refly this route here, hopefully by the end of, excuse me, by the end of next year, all on our own charging network. So we've got a lot of chargers to get in the ground, a lot of infrastructure. But we're going to shift that route up into Colorado and have it go through Grand Junction there. This would be my goal, right? So next slide. And we were able to do the first passenger carrying electric flight up in New York a couple weeks ago, which is pretty cool. A huge milestone for the whole industry as a whole. So, and next slide, I believe that is it. Thank you so much for having me. I could take some questions if there's time. If I went over, I apologize. My contact info is on the screen. So feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to help in any way I can. Apologies for not being there in person. I have some family matters stuff I'm taking care of, but thanks you so much for the opportunity. So
Thank you, Christopher. If I know this board, I'm certain there's some curious questions about your technology. Am I correct? Commissioners, do you have any questions?
it's a really shiny thing.
I have a lot of questions, but I might save them for Davie Lane because mine are around funding mechanisms. But
That's true. Thank you, Christopher, for the presentation. Curious on the charger that you're not going to go to NACS like the rest of the automotive world, or in North America at least.
Where's next for
That's
me?
no, that's the North American Charging Standard. He's
Got it. Got it.
Yes,
No, it's just standardized on the Tesla
Got it.
charger
Thank you.
connector. So it won't be able to be used for local vehicles unless you have an adapter.
Yeah, so if we have a ton of employees at Beta that have Teslas overwhelmingly, and you can plug in the adapter and plug into the Tesla and it charges it just fine. As of right now, it's CCS1 is where the electric aircraft industry is going to go. And just talking to all the different OEMs, I mean, that's the slide I showed. We are in conversations with all of those, and the one that we're not, that is going fully proprietary, we're actually talking to them about developing an adapter, where essentially you just have an adapter and you'd still use ours for their aircraft, right? So yeah, that's where the electric aircraft side is probably going to go.
And are the other manufacturers developing charging networks?
No.
Properly as you want.
So we are the only one, and we've spent a lot of R&D money on it. And so I'll quote one of our frenemies, I guess you could say, in the sense of with the amount of money it would take us to go build the same charger, we could build 100 of your chargers. So they're just going to go out. And then, you know, we've already have 52 installed that they can use, and every charger placed. It's just good for the whole industry. And also, I mean, we talked to the FAA all the time. The FAA made it very clear that they don't want 11 different chargers out on a ramp, right? I mean, the airport, you guys don't want it either, right? Nobody wants that, right? There should be, it's just like your self-serve fuel station right now of it serves every, you know, GA aircraft, and your Jet A nozzle serves majority of the airliners, right? So we tried to standardize it as much as we could.
And I one other question with regards to emissions. You did not touch on that comparative to the combustion.
I'm sorry, what was that?
The emissions differential between this and regular mainline engines?
The emission or
Emissions.
mission? Sorry.
Yeah, emissions. No problem. Emissions,
Emissions.
Christopher.
We used to have a slide on that. I mean, there, so our aircraft has zero emissions, right? We don't put out any CO2 at all. I don't have the data offhand of the offset, but I know we are completely emission free. So.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yeah, just a couple things. One, I'm wondering about range for your aircraft. I mean, obviously, this could serve whatever electric aircraft, but just to make sure that if we are, let's say we do have this infrastructure here that it's connecting to the, you know, Denver, Salt Lake, you know, wherever else somebody might be wanting to go to or from.
Yep. No, great question. So, right now with current battery technology for the CTOL, you're looking at right around 250 nautical miles as with reserves, right? We don't like to say numbers without reserves because you're always going to have reserves in there, right? So, and that's as the crow flies, right? So most likely for comfortability, you're probably going to want at least one charger between Grand Junction and Denver, whether that be Eagle or Aspen, or you guys are the expert of what valley to take. You know, fly, especially flying over the mountain area, which we're also talking to, you know, those aircraft airports and have kind of a system-wide approach of getting that charging network, right? And then on the, no, I'm going to say the cuss word of Utah, right? Utah's installing some chargers this year, and I believe was it Vernal isn't too far, definitely within flying distance of Grand Junction. And it'll probably go Vernal, Heber City, Salt Lake. So,
Okay, one other maybe related question is, and this is an issue obviously with EVs in general, is charge time, right? So we have an aircraft lands, needs to charge. Is this an overnight charge? If they're going to make another, if they're passing through Grand Junction, how long are they? What are they going to lay over? What's the situation for recharging one of your aircraft?
yep. So 50 minutes from 0 to 100. However, normally I ask a question, are there any pilots in the room?
Nope, he's trying to kill a moose today.
So, you know, basically it's federally mandated, like, you know, normally pilots don't go up and say, I'm going to fly till I'm out of gas. Find an airport, land, and refill, right? It's actually illegal to do that. You have to, before you take off, you have to do a weight and balance, fuel calcs, make sure you have enough fuel with reserve, emergency situations, all that, right? So your useful charge time is actually going to be less than 50 minutes, considering that it's all mission-based, right? Are you actually going to fly the full range? Or do you are you only, if you're only going to fly 40 miles, you don't need to charge the full time, right? And you have your reserve. So a meaningful charge is going to be less than that 50 minutes. But we charge our aircraft right now, and it's 50 minutes, under an hour. from 0 to 100. So
great. Okay, thank you.
At which by the time that the pilot or the cargo is loaded and unloaded, the aircraft will be charged and you'll be good to go. So
I just wanted to have one follow up to your question about kind of range, because I think right now we think in big cities because that's kind of how our service works. But, you know, assuming we're all hopeful that electric aviation is going to continue to progress, obviously the companies involved like Beta are very hopeful. But as we make progress, we actually anticipate that the usage will be quite different. Like it will be disruptive in a positive way because they're small and they can't go as far, but they're, you know, economically efficient and they don't need as many resources. So when I think of electric aviation in Grand Junction, I anticipate that there will be a fair amount of Grand Junction Aspen flying going on. You know, we talk about how many national parks we have within a 3-hour drive, right? I think that, as a rule of thumb, is a really good way of thinking about electric aircraft and how far they can go in a relatively easy manner. And the airlines are excited as well. I mean, they're skeptical. Our industry is skeptical for the most part, but electric aviation keeps making progress, and you know, it's clearing hurdles, and you know, planes are flying. I love that picture that Christopher mentioned, the one over the Grand Canyon, because I'm like, man, you have to have confidence that that plane is in good shape if you're gonna fly that. That is a good picture.
Head nodding over there.
So overall, I mean, when you look at the distance that can be traveled, I think it's all the more reason why, for me, I think our airport has to pay particular attention to electric aviation and how it progresses, because I think we will and should play an outsized role because we do have the electrical infrastructure to support it. You know, we're the biggest city by far between Denver and Salt Lake. So when you think about where are they going to go, they need to go.
Right. And I think it's noteworthy. And I just jumped online, Christopher, and I was looking, and correct me if I'm wrong, but these planes are 140 to 190. Is that, am I looking at the right thing here? Is that ballpark? Or what are the, maybe give us an idea, what's your aircraft cost?
The cost of the aircraft?
Yeah.
Cody, he wants to buy one.
it definitely didn't say that.
Yeah, so we're looking at the CTOL, I believe it's $3.5 million, and then the VTOL is $4.5 million, I believe. So your true cost savings is the maintenance and long term that our operators have really seen. That's where the math really shifted.
Okay.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us an education on this disruptive but phenomenal technology. We're excited to keep learning. Angela is and her unique perspective offering that we are the largest city between Denver and Salt Lake, and we have a lot of sun, and there's lots of ways to think about how we could power up these incredible planes. So it's a fun thing to think about, and I'm excited to also hear from CDOT and learn more about that study. So thanks for carving out time to join us and educate us.
Yeah,
we appreciate
it. Absolutely, my pleasure. And just one more thing, open invite to Burlington, Vermont for everyone. Happy to come host you for a day. We'll feed you lunch. We'll show you the plane, how it's built, all that good stuff. Yeah, it's really cool. I call it like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory for planes. So come up and see us. So, but thank you so much. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Christopher.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Minus the everlasting gobstoppers. Okay, let's roll right into the CEO report, if you don't mind.
So we, Colin and I, both of our reports left. We know we want to try to finish around 12:30, so we'll be back.
Okay.
As a reminder for commissioners, next week we have our joint agency meeting. And so for those newer members, every year, once a year, we have a meeting where we present to the full Grand Junction City Council, for full board of Mesa County Commissioners and our Airport Authority Board. Just on the airport, it's an hour-long meeting. You know, we try to cover kind of a whole year's worth of information. But on that note, air service is always a top topic. This is kind of air service development season in my world. I mean, I was at United headquarters yesterday, as an example, at Breeze a couple weeks ago. So I wanted to give a quick service update to the board, just so that you guys are informed. As a rule of thumb, I really try to not present anything new that our board hasn't seen. I'm going to go through this fast.
Really quickly before you jump in. And Victoria, would you mind updating our calendar update? It doesn't have a location on that, just so everyone gets to the right spot. And you guys see your parking permits here for that meeting. Is up to you?
Yep. Okay. Yep, and it's thank at you. The University Center, and Victoria will put the details so you know.
Thank you, thank you.
Yes. Thursday.
Thursday the 23rd at 1 p.m. Thank you.
You guys know the economic outlook, macroeconomic outlook is uncertain right now in the country. This is not news to you. You all deal with this in your businesses. This really impacts aviation, the macro economics. In my time here in Grand Junction, almost 8 years, I mean, the economy has been in good shape. And you know, we also had a global pandemic that was weird, but otherwise, macro economy has been good. The macro economy gets shaky, the industry can look different, and so you know that really plays into airline behavior, and we're starting to see that a little bit. Next slide. Consumer sentiment is low, you know that. Won't go quite this way. You know, something that we don't talk about very much, but I think is interesting, good to look at. You know, we talk about how airlines are growing, it feels like they're doing well. Airline revenue as a share of GDP is lower than it's been historically. And I mean, I think that's noteworthy because people are not spending as much on aviation, and like, what does that trend look like long term? Again, these are kind of the macroeconomic factors that we're constantly looking at, we as in like Harrison and I, just kind of look and say, okay, what is the true air service development picture at a broad level, and making sure we're good partners to the airlines as we work with them on shared goals. Airline profitability, there's a reason there's a million jokes about how to make $1 million in by owning an airline. You know, usually it's start with a billion or something. So airlines are not historically profitable companies. You know, for our paranoid banker, like this would not be a safe customer, I think. Sorry, we always have at least one paranoid banker on board.
And you're welcome.
An important thing to offset rose-colored glasses in the US wear. So, it usually lags. It's continuing to lag. And you look, that gap is a bit wide right now. And so, you know, that's something we look at. And we love to see that gap close a little. But driving that, and as expensive as fares are, when you adjust for inflation, they're historically pretty low, the domestic average. So our gap between the domestic average and Grand Junction, our fare gap between the domestic average and our average fare paid has actually been shrinking in the last year. And airlines have remained profitable, so that's kind of our sweet spot. We want them to make money here, but not any more than they need to keep this going. But just overall, like this is what's really driving that prior slide. There is not consensus within what's going to happen, in particular with ultra-low-cost carrier model. Spirit Airlines, well, actually, I think I have a slide on Spirit, but airlines are looking at how they make more money. International has really driven revenue growth on large airlines historically, I mean, especially you know, in the last 10 years or so. But with the global political situation, that's more volatile. So it'll just be interesting how things work out. I mean, we're all watching. Next. But the ultra-low-cost carriers that ULCC, and that is Frontier, Spirit, Allegiant, Breeze, Sun Country, you know, that is something that there are strong opinions about, and there's just a lot of rockiness. Avelo, another one. So Spirit filed for bankruptcy in August. That's the second time this year they filed for bankruptcy. So noteworthy. In airlines, something that is a really strong predictor of survivability as an airline is how many routes, especially for an ultra-low-cost carrier, how many routes you fly that have no competition on them. Spirit filed for bankruptcy, dropped their schedule. Almost immediately, Allegiant and Frontier flooded the markets that they remained in, quite a big amount. So this will be interesting how this works out, but things do not look good for them. I mean, how are they going to make money? That's the big question. They have. They are way in the red. And actually more than 13. Kind of zooming back into Grand Junction, we're continuing to see growth. That's great. I mean, it's a bit feast or famine right now with airports. Not a lot of airports are growing a little bit. Like, there's airports that got a lot smaller in the pandemic, which is really small. There's airports that got a lot bigger in the pandemic, and growth is kind of mellowing out. I would put Denver Airport in that category. Between the pandemic and their new gates coming online, like, they got a lot bigger, and now you see their growth is fairly steady. I mean, their passenger traffic is fairly steady. Demand is cooled over there. We're not really seeing it here, but small airports, air service is just more volatile, right? Small changes have a much bigger impact than small changes at a big airport. But we continue to grow. We continue to see growth. We continue to expect growth from our airline partners based on what they're saying. This is the most capacity in 1 year we've ever had, assigned by seats. And that is even more than when you look at that peak in 2020 when airlines, as Harrison usually describe it, airlines were doing silly things. My best Harrison voice. So, even more seats than we had that year where seats really boomed and then fell off. Next slide. There were 5 months this year where we set all-time records. So what you see in yellow is the prior or the current or prior record. So, like, so you can see our capacity in the fourth quarter, all 3 months, we're setting capacity records. So October, we have more seats than we've ever had scheduled in our market. Same with November, same with December. And as we look into 2026, January, February looks similarly great. We expect to set records. March also looks like it's record setting. March is far enough away to where I don't believe it's not solid enough for me to have confidence. January is solid enough for me. Obviously, you guys know who's been growing here. United and American have contributed to the long-term growth, but in the last few years, we've been United driving that growth. We just put all of the other carriers who've operated here in blue because then they kind of show up on these graphs if you try to separate it out between Allegiant, Breeze, Avelo, Denver Air Connection. I think it's interesting to see something I want to point out before I understand up. But here, United, in 2010, United had the market share, right? And then you see American come up and pass United, and then you start to see United come back. What that correlates to almost perfectly is where Scott Kirby worked. Scott Kirby is the CEO of United Airlines. He was the president of American Airlines. And airports like ours are really important. I just think it's an interesting trend that when you look at, there's other airports like and but those two carriers are contributing to most of the growth. As we look ahead, I mean, passenger traffic is stable. We don't expect big changes to the number of flights per day. So we can skip this slide and move on to the next. You get to see this all the time. But I do want to talk about the regional capacity. So in October, you can see we're almost the busiest airport as measured by daily departures per day. We are the busiest airport as measured by October in the region, even more than Aspen, just time for them. They have 14 flights a day, but they're around a smaller area. On average, next slide, that picture changes as we know in the first quarter. So looking at January, which again, those January schedules feel real and subject to fewer changes. If you look, we end up in the middle of the pack January on an average daily departure basis. We still have about 13 flights per day. You look at Montrose doubles from 5 in October to an average of 10 in January. I bet there are no days where they have 10 flights. They have like 6 flights some days, and you know, a couple days a week they have probably 15 or 20. So it's a very leisure focused schedule. But you see the schedules of the resort airports rolling along with the nonstop routes. But again, many of those are flown once or twice a week. So in our world, we say not every dot on the map is the same size, you know. So when we have six times daily service somewhere, you know, so six times seven, you know, that's a lot of flights per week. And smiling, so I must be right. But you know, you compare that to like, you know, maybe a Saturday only service to a location, if one flight a week, still shows up the same number of destinations. But we know this is important to the community. We want to make sure that kind of what flights look like in the region. When we look at United and all the airlines, but when we look at the network carriers and how they're growing, we look at a few different things, like what is their domestic average, and then what is their hub average. And you know, again, because we might be growing, but if we're not growing as fast as they're growing as hubs are connected into, we want to talk to them about why. What you see is overall kind of where the airlines are. You see American isn't growing as much as United. You can see that the hubs we're connected into are really in a stable state. They're not in growth mode. And our numbers reflect that. So American service is really stable. Delta, again, also pretty stable. But grow within the slowest growing domestic network in the U.S., they're very internationally focused. And Salt Lake is a hub that they haven't been focused on. And so that one really hasn't experienced growth. And then you look at United. United is growing the fastest domestically, and Denver is their fastest growing hub. I actually think next year Chicago will be. United just got 5 and 8 to Chicago in the news because there were lawsuits and things. Very competitive there. So I do think that their Chicago hub is going to grow pretty fast next year. But just overall, I think it's helpful to know the health of the airlines we're connected to. Because we don't control that, and we need to understand their business numbers. I'm not. We've talked a lot about these things, so I don't necessarily need to go through all of those. We've talked a lot about leakage. We have updated leakage. Leakage remains low in the region. It remains higher in the first quarter than in other quarters. Our leakage in first quarter 2025 actually went down compared to first quarter 2024, and we are seeing the most passenger travel since the pandemic. And again, you know, these trends, this is what we've seen, but we continue to see this. For the most, leakage tends to be more concentrated in visitors than in residents. Part of that is probably how we measure leakage, because if you're, you know, we measure it as if you came Mesa County and you stayed in Mesa County and you didn't use our airport, you leaked. Well, if you're on a multi-state trip, even if you spent 5 days at Black Canyon, you came to Palisade for one day, you're still considered a visitor, you're still considered to have leaked, even if you flew in Montrose and that's right. We're really happy with leakage. And for the most part, our leakage continues to just be concentrated in those resort airports during the season, offer extra nonstops. Passengers are not leaking to lower fares primarily. They're leaking for nonstop. The average fares they're paying are substantially higher than what we're seeing in our market. So all of these are really good news when it comes to airlines. Like to see a market that is hyper, doesn't have a hyper elasticity of demand. Pricing, they want to see that. All right, I think I can be done. We've seen most of these slides, but I wanted to give you guys an idea of kind of one of the components for it.
Thank you, Angela. Colin, go ahead. Do you think you would be 4 minutes, maybe? Okay, thank you.
First, we celebrate, though.
Yeah.
I was trying not to steal Colin's thunder, but
celebrate.
$38 million.
Yeah, let's celebrate that. This is really exciting. Thanks for all your hard work in the spring so that we could say yes to that grant, everyone. So.
Well, and thanks for having everything queued up and approved, too. I mean, we've talked about that before, and we talked about it through this in my 3 minutes remaining. three topics. We'll go fast. Start with the runway. So we talked about this multiple times, but we have two big bid packages coming up, two multi-year bid packages. One in Cyan that's going to bid in February of this coming year in 26, and then another one that's on Orange that's planned in 28. So if you'll advance forward, we talked about this too before a few weeks ago when that grant came in. You know, we're targeting opening the runway in 28. We've done all this coordination with the FAA to get the procedures lined up. But that left a shortfall in funding. And so that's what we approached the FAA with, to tell them about that shortfall and make sure they understood it. And that's shown in yellow. It was pretty large. You'll advance. Getting a $38 million grant really helped fix that problem. Shown in green, it actually, the blue represents money that we have talked to the FAA about, and we have place held those amounts. So what you'll actually see is a slight deduction even in 27 based on what we anticipate. So not only did we take care of that deficit, we actually bought ourselves some flexibility in 27. So
amazing.
Yep, it's in a really great position. So next steps on this is we're going to meet with the FAA later this month, just shore up our plan for moving forward. And then we will come to the board in December for a grant application approval, like we always do in the winter. Any questions on the runway?
Congrats.
Yeah, big deal. Parking lot, still on track. That's the punchline there. Even though it rained a bunch today, I think they're still supposed to be paved out. I checked on them this morning. We haven't talked too much about this, at least in project update, but the solar, I have the wrong title, it's the solar expansion. We're actually converting 113 spaces to covered spaces. We actually pick up a few spots, believe it or not, just integration. This is a little rendering of what the view looks like. It is kind of a double slanted roof. The architects really like it and think it fits stylistically. I don't know about those things, but they told me that they do.
Sawtooth.
Works great.
Yeah, they're supposed to begin that in late winter, early spring. That's when they're going to kick that off after the other parking lot is open. And then Rebecca's not here, but I'll give a quick update on everything going on in the terminal. High level interior refresh underway. If you haven't seen it, it looks great. Go take a look. Same with the signage, that's underway as well. You can continue. Tower, we're still waiting on some environmental approvals. And then finally, there's curbside chairlifts. I don't know if you've seen this in a board meeting or not. This is something that we are looking also to implement. If you'll advance one more, the last three are all planned on prior to Thanksgiving. The chairlift is after the Thanksgiving push.
So those chairlifts, last year, Aspen closed a historic chairlift, and they auctioned off the actual chairs, and so we purchased them. I mean, because I told them to. But because I had this vision that, you know, I love the idea of people sitting in these chairlifts with, like, this plaque about how these are historic chairlifts from Aspen, we're talking, like, I think 1920s chairlifts, I can't remember, but working with the resort. I'm on a little plaque right now, like sitting in these chairlifts while looking out at the National Monument going, where am I? Like Aspen's like right behind me too, and just really giving people some place is just really important. And so that kind of was pushed to the back burner, and we've had other things going on, but the architects just sent over these renderings and they want to incorporate the new brand colors and things. And actually, I think we're going to incorporate the benching and other areas of the terminal. So for those on the visioning committee, we'll be emailing you about kind of what we hope to do there. But right now, those are planned to go in before the Christmas holiday season. Those will replace the picnic tables we have out in front of the terminal. Grand to pass them on to in.
Maybe we can repurpose the Powderhorn chairlifts for Thin Place or Escalator.
The escalator jokes never end, Ben. They never end.
The whole device.
Oh, I love it.
On that note, we have been. Escalator's been open very soon.
Perfect.
That's what I need.
So, and on the note of the interior refresh, the team has offered to any board members who are interested in seeing it before the November board meeting, just to let the team know if you want to show up 30 minutes early and go walk the terminal to see the new carpet and all of that.
Yeah, because that should all be done for the November board meeting. There's a chance there'll be a little bit of signage still being installed. But
cool.
Wonderful. Okay.
So moved.
Perfect. And then I need, I think actually need you to read it. Do I need them to read it, Dan?
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind.
Wow. He's like,
thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move to go into executive session for the purpose of considering personnel matters as authorized by Colorado Revised Statute Section 24-6-4024F, specifically including the Chief Executive Officer's employment contract and compensation.
Thank you, Commissioner West. May I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Feynman. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Wonderful. Will you show us how to use the tape recorder?
Yes.
Thank you all so, so much. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, thank you for being here, Brad and Colin. Always good to see you guys.
I wanted to make sure you guys got to see, like, the sum.
And I'll call you back.
Got it. Thanks, Jimmy.